it's time for our monthly visit with Dr. Dean Hussong from his dentist office here in Tomahawk. Good morning, Dr. Dean.
Well, good morning, Jeff, and good morning to all of our WJJQ listeners.
Yes, it's Monday morning. The sun is shining, and it's better than we saw earlier this morning with all the frost. Are you a wintertime guy, Dr. Dean?
I still enjoy winter. Yeah. I probably could do with a couple less months of it than we've had the last couple of years, you know.
Yeah. Amen to that. That's for sure.
If we had a nice warm fall extended a month after Thanksgiving, I wouldn't be too disappointed. Yeah.
They say that house guests and fish smell the same after about 3 days or so. Well, after about 6 months of winter, I'd say that applies there too. You got to know when to leave.
Well,
that's the timing is everything in this life, Dr. Dean, isn't it?
It is.
It sure is. I noticed on my notes here this morning, our humor is at the end, and we can certainly save time for that, but I don't know about you. I'm a fan of history. It was my best subject in school. History and geography were always my best classes, and I'm not a math guy, but I still love history. I think if all the TV that I watch, 99% is on the History Channel. It's my thing. So I'm very interested in our first set of topics here for our conversation this morning, which includes the history of dentistry.
Well, we started talking on that last month a little bit.
Okay.
I guess it was a bigger topic than what I expected is going to be. And so I kind of got up to our colonial times and had mentioned George Washington. You know, he'd suffered from periodontal disease, like about 50% of our current population suffers from periodontal disease, and that causes loss of a lot of teeth. And it caused loss of his teeth at a very early age. And he'd struggled with it back then. At that time, a lot of your dentistry that was known and done was done by silversmiths, goldsmiths, ivory workers, and clockmakers.
Okay.
And so, in fact, Paul Revere, he had identified somebody by the teeth that he had made when they found him on the battlefield. He was unrecognizable, but he identified the person by the dentures he had made for him.
The story goes that his dentures were made of wood. Was that true?
Oh, George Washington?
Yeah.
Well, I think it's possible. I didn't find anything in this look at the history that had indicated that, but I did find that his last set was evidently made by a goldsmith because they had gold as the basis on them.
Okay.
And in fact, that was done even when I got out of dental school in 1978. There were still some gold-based partials, in particular, not full dentures that I'm aware of that I ever saw. But even as late as the 70s, there were some of those still being made.
Was that like a gold plating over the top of something?
No.
Solid gold.
Well, that's not solid gold, because solid gold is pretty soft, and doesn't work very well. But a gold alloy, which typically is about two-thirds gold and one-third other metals that improve its work characteristics.
So I guess it's still not known for sure if those dentures were made of wood or not.
He may have had some that early on, but his last set, and that set, interestingly enough, disappeared from a museum at one time. So somebody must have recognized the value there.
Yeah, I was thinking when he went to the dentist with gold, with wooden dentures, how did the dentist know if it was poor hygiene or termites?
Good question.
See, that's my little attempt at humor here.
You'll have to ask somebody other than myself.
Okay, let's move on with the history, though. Maryland was the first dental school.
It was, and that occurred before the Civil War, actually quite a few years before the Civil War in 1840. And so, and the United States by that time, after the early colonial days, was recognized as one of the leading places for dental care.
Okay.
So, and by the mid-1850s, nitrous oxide had been used for dental procedures because, as you can imagine, and everybody's seen the westerns where people are going to the bar or the saloon before they go to the dentist, you know, but to get anesthetized in their way. But nitrous oxide was being used in places, and that was a very common. There was a report of one dentist having removed over 3,000 teeth with the use of just nitrous oxide.
And still in use today, right?
Nitrous oxide is,
yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's used very differently than it was used back then. It's controlled by different regulators on the machines so that you cannot over-administer the amount of nitrous oxide. And because you still need to have oxygen, obviously, for breathing and
sure.
for your other bodily functions to be going on. And that was the problem that they had back then. There was no mechanical regulation of that, and so it was all by guess, and there were some fatalities with that because of lack of oxygen, really.
And Novocaine became popular for use back in 1905, and that's still used today.
Well, Novocaine actually is not being used today, but
really?
but that term is...
what about the over-the-counter stuff? Are they using an over-the-counter at all, or is it not used at all?
Novocaine, okay. Yeah, Novocaine is not used. It was actually, even though it was an early anesthetic and better than anything that had been used up till that time, it wasn't a very profound anesthetic like we have today. But everybody, that term has stayed with the profession. People refer to it as Novocaine.
Right.
Novocaine was discontinued long before I graduated from dental school in 1978. And so I think by early 50s, there were other anesthetics that were just better. They lasted longer. They were more effective. Novocaine, although it had its place at its time, had a lot of things that were not that great about it. And so as more became known in the chemistry field, the changes were made. But it's still canes. I mean, xylocaine, maracaine, prilocaine, they're all canes. And originally, and you might, you know, guess from that, if they're all canes, cocaine was used, okay, before the local anesthetics came to be. Cocaine was used way in the ancient cultures as a way to control dental pain.
Well, you know, they used what they had at the time, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
X-rays of our teeth started in 1896. Wow. Okay. But it took a while to get those pictures.
Yeah, like a 15-minute x-ray?
God, I can't even... Just, you know, 2 seconds in there gags me, and I can't... I have a hard time with x-rays, and my dental hygienists all know that, and they treat me with kid gloves, but for folks with an issue with x-rays on their teeth, 15 minutes is... I couldn't imagine it.
I know.
You'd have to tie me down.
And think of all the collateral damage from the radiation.
Oh, I suppose,
you know?
Yeah.
And in fact, there's reports on some of those early dentists that they were holding them with their hands, okay? And if you did that for multiple patients over multiple years, some of them developed radiation-induced diseases because of too much radiation.
Hmm,
yes.
Boy. Progress is a wonderful thing.
It is, yeah. Yeah. The good old days weren't always so good.
Not always. fluoride came into play in 1909. Now it's in a lot of tap water that we drink, I understand.
Well, actually, it's always been in water, okay? And there, you can't have any water supply that doesn't have some fluoride in there naturally.
And okay? It's not for teeth purpose. It's just there natural.
It's just natural.
Okay. I didn't know that either.
Yes. And, well, that's how it was first discovered in Colorado and Texas. They would notice these people who had mottled kind of discolored teeth, kind of brownish spots on them and everything, but no cavities. These brown spots were not decay. In fact, there was no evidence of any decay in these people. And so they got their heads together and started figuring out it's got to be something in the air we breathe, the food we eat, or the water we drink. Okay,
right.
It's got to be something environmental.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and it took a series of years and a lot of discovery by a number of different people, but they came to the conclusion that it was fluoride, and depending on the amount of concentration, if it was a little too much, you would get these dark spots. But some of these people had no dark spots, but yet had no cavities, okay?
Hmm.
And so they assumed then that there was an ideal level which it could be at, and then you would get the benefit of the fluoride, but not the discoloration of the tooth. And so that was discovered, and then that's when the push was made to include fluoride at the optimal concentration in public water supplies. And so that's been very, very beneficial over the years in helping reduce the amount of decay that we see.
So that takes us through dental history through the early 1900s, and I'll bet you the advancements between then and now have been, we've been need about 10 or 12 different programs to go through it all.
Well, we would, yeah. And I thought it was, since we started off with the Greek times and everything, to kind of get us into the modern times or what we think of modern, and I'm sure 50 years from now, some of the things we're doing won't seem so modern to them.
Exactly. The times, they are a-changing, that's for sure. Next topic is worn what?
Dentitions, teeth.
Dentitions, worn dentitions. That's a new word for me. Boy, I'm learning all kinds of stuff here this morning, Dr. Dean. Let's go into that worn dentitions topic.
Well, I'll tell you what. Teeth wear is something that we see often. We see in all ages, even sometimes in children's teeth, the primary teeth, the baby teeth, we'll see some wear. It's not an issue in most children if the teeth are there and have been formed normally. But as we start getting our adult teeth, our permanent teeth, by age six, it doesn't take very many years before we start seeing evidence of wear on some of those teeth. And some of that is normal wear, and some of it is abnormal wear. It's an aging phenomenon, and sometimes it's related to disease, sometimes medications, sometimes environmental factors, okay, and sometimes food and drink. And so it's a matter of being observant, being aware, and if it's something beyond the range of normal, then that's when intervention or at least discussion needs to be had about if it's something that needs to be treated or not.
Now, these are some fascinating facts here. 50% of swimmers have teeth erosion. Miners have teeth erosion. Citrus workers and people who drink a lot of Coca-Cola.
Yeah, and it's not just Coca-Cola, but that's...
Soft drinks in general.
Yeah, soft drinks in general. Okay. I've seen a lot of wear with Mountain Dew, but the one statistic I could find was for Coca-Cola, and that's 36% phosphoric acid, which has a pH of 2.4. Okay. Now, people,
that'll take the enamel right off your teeth.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it doesn't need a pH that low. A pH of 7, which neutral water has, is non-acidic, non-caustic, okay? And pHs can go from near 0 up to 14, and 7 is right in the middle. So you've got your acidic side, okay, and that's anything less than 7, and you've got your basic side, which is like soaps and things like that, which is goes up to 14. But when you're talking about pH, 7 is where the needle is happy, okay? It's right in the middle. And if you've got a pH only just a little bit below that of 6.8, you've got something that will start eroding dentin on teeth.
So I understand why citrus workers may have this issue, because citrus juice has a lot of acid in it, correct? Even though we're supposed to drink it, everything in moderation.
Right, absolutely. But a lot of them, you know, just like a lot of people, you develop habits when you're doing your work, okay? You may have some habits here. I don't know if they involve food or anything, but whatever it is. And a lot of citrus workers, particularly in the lemon groves, would suck on sliced pieces of lemon.
Sure.
And I've seen some incredible pictures of where just the front six teeth, upper and lower, have just a tremendous amount of erosion. Actually, all the enamel's been eroded off.
Huh.
We don't live in an area like that, so it's not common to see here. But some of the people I've taken extensive training from out in California, they've shown me these pictures, and it's incredible what that can do. But mining, and that's closer to home, because of all the grit and everything involved in the dust.
Just what you're breathing in.
Yeah, breathing in and gets in your mouth and stuff. That can cause a tremendous amount of abrasion on teeth, because it's like having a sandpaper in there, regardless of what the material is that they're mining. And that's all abrasive on teeth and can cause environmental factors.
What's in the pools that swimmers are having this issue?
Well, that's your chlorine.
The chlorine.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, I had a good friend in dental school. He was a collegiate swimmer, okay, before he got into dental school, but he kept up his swimming actually his whole life. I mean, he would go, I ran into him several times at different courses and everything. One was out in Hawaii, and he just completed a swim in between the different islands. It was like a 20-30 mile swim, you know. And of course, there's not going to be any chlorine, but right. From 50% of the swimmers from doing what they do, they show erosion on their teeth from being in the chlorine that much.
Boy, even when we're trying to stay in shape, we have things going, it strikes against us, it seems
it can.
Boy, I'll tell you. But now, tooth wear is actually a success story, not a failure story. Now, how do you figure that?
Well, if you think about it, and 50% of the people, just like George Washington, experience periodontal disease. Periodontal disease is still, even 200 years plus after George Washington, is still one of the major causes of tooth loss. Well, if the tooth isn't there, it's not going to be shown anywhere. Okay, so if you've got a tooth that has survived periodontal disease and is in your mouth, even though it's worn and has a couple strikes against it, that's sure better than a tooth that's not there.
That's for sure. And, boy, I can tell you firsthand, Dr. Dean, I know that periodontal disease, tell me if I'm wrong here, but you can't reverse it, but you can kind of hold off the tooth loss if you get a handle on things and start getting regular care. You can still hold on to your teeth for a while.
Oh, absolutely, and sometimes a lifetime. It depends upon a number of factors, and we won't get into all those, but as long as there's enough bone to hold the tooth, because what a person sees and recognizes as a tooth when somebody smiles is only about 1/3 of what the tooth is composed of, okay? 2/3 of that tooth is below the gum and in the bone and supported by the bone, okay? And the problem with periodontal disease, it attacks that 2/3 below what you can see, okay?
It's what you can't see gets you.
That's exactly right, Jeff.
What about, gastrointestinal reflux disease can also cause tooth wear, and again, it all comes down to the acid, right? That's all coming up, and it hits your teeth, and if that happens all the time, I can see where that's an issue now, too.
And it's amazing, and I hadn't realized that, number one, that it was as prevalent as it is, because 65% of the population experiences heartburn at least twice a week, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if twice a week is the why they use that as a yardstick. If more than that tends to cause more problems. But I had a friend who, from the time he was old enough to even know about it, care about it, he had always had heartburn, but he just thought that was that way for everybody, because that was that way for him as a kid, okay? And by the time he was in his middle-aged years, he had developed a severe case, and it ended up turning into esophageal cancer.
Oh, boy.
Because of the continual irritation to the mucosa in the esophagus, because there's different there's different valves in the gastrointestinal system, and one between the stomach and the esophagus. So the esophagus takes it from your mouth down to your stomach, and there's a valve there that keeps those stomach fluids, which have to be acidic, okay, to help us digest
right.
and do that stuff. But you don't want that going back up. But heartburn oftentimes is when that is not sealing properly and gets regurgitated up, and sometimes not as high as the mouth where you might taste it, okay, but is doing what it shouldn't be doing to an area where it should not be in. And so it's really important that people be aware that if they're experiencing any heartburn, or if they're noticing wear areas on teeth, and for GERD, it's often on areas that you're not going to see. Probably only your dentist is going to see them. On the backs of your front teeth is a real common spot for people who deal with GERD to have enamel loss, and so that makes those checkups even more important.
This has been a lesson in history. It's been a lesson in different things that can cause our teeth to get worn out. But also, it teaches me, Dr. Dean, that everything in our body is connected. You can get heart disease from a bad mouth and not having good dental hygiene. Everything within us is connected in one way or the other and has effects on other parts of the body.
Oh, it does. And I guess that's a kind of a life lesson,
sure.
Not only for our own lives, but we're connected to everybody around us too, in
exactly.
our environment too. And so it's a big circle, and it's important that we not ignore things, okay, and that we seek others who have expertise and knowledge and experience in the areas where we don't, because we are all ignorant
yeah.
about different things,
right.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
There isn't anybody that's knowledgeable about everything, and so it's important that we rely on the professionals around us to help with those things that we may not have personal experience with or family experience with, so we can maximize our health and longevity.
Amen to that. So we're going to put a hold on the learning now until next month. Now it's time for some fun.
All right.
It's almost Halloween, Dr. Dean.
Okay. So are you up for some jokes?
Sure.
Okay.
Always up for that.
Okay. So why don't mummies take time off?
Well, I have the answer right here, but...
but what have you guessed it?
I may have got there eventually.
Okay. They're afraid to unwind.
They just don't. Yeah,
okay.
They don't want to unwind. Yes.
And so
okay.
What do skeletons order at the restaurant?
Bone soup.
Close. Spare ribs.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Spare ribs.
Okay, that'll
okay.
work, too. Okay.
All right. And so what can you expect to get from a ghost handing out stuff to trick-or-treaters?
I don't know.
Blueberries.
That's a good one, too.
Okay.
What do the skeletons say to the bartender?
You got me.
I'll have a beer and a mop, please. You can
right.
use that one. Feel
okay.
free.
Okay. All right. Very good.
Dr. Dean Huesong, what are your regular office hours?
Well, our normal office hours are 8 to 5 and 7 to 2, depending on the day. And so you just call and you'll get us, and we can get you an appointment.
Oftentimes when Greg texts me on a Sunday afternoon, I wonder if I should read it or not. But when I got the text that I'd be talking to you today, it was a good text. It was a good conversation, too. I always enjoy this, Dr. Dean.
Well, I've enjoyed being with you and to our WJJQ listeners also.
And I'm sure Greg will be back next month.
Okay, very good.
He had to go be grandpa today.
Oh, well, that's a fun thing to do.
That's a fun thing to do. Thank you, Dr. Dean.
Bye now.